The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivalled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, along with a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Welcome to Holy Smoke, the Spectator's religion podcast. I'm Damian Thompson. Since the election of an overwhelmingly secular Labour government, people who describe themselves as humanists have a spring in their step. For example, there's a prospect that humanist weddings will be legally recognised in England and Wales. They already are in Scotland. But what exactly is a humanist? Definitions vary, and there's a vigorous debate about to what extent the ethical but firmly atheist beliefs of the rather loosely organised modern humanist movement are descended from Christianity. In this episode of Holy Smoke, we'll hear from Andrew Copson, CEO of Humanist UK and President of Humanist International, and the theologian and Spectator contributor Theo Hobson, author of God Created Humanism, the Christian Basis of Secular Values. I spoke to them earlier, and as you'll hear, it was quite a lively debate. So, Andrew, who could start with you? I've heard a certain amount of speculation that the new Labour government, the members of which are overwhelmingly not fiercely attached to any particular religion, might be more receptive to the humanist ideas, for which I think you're probably the main spokesman in this country. For example, there's a push for humanist weddings, which I find an interesting concept, because I would have thought that humanists could perhaps dispense with the theocratic notion of a wedding, if it is theocratic. But we could get to that later. Really, my starting point is, what is humanism? Because when I look it up, I find so many different definitions. Some of them are overtly Christian, if the earliest ones are overtly Christian. And then in the secular world, sort of rival definitions and some very confusing definitions. So if you could take me through what you understand by humanism and what the movement for which you are a champion.
Yeah, absolutely. The word humanism, as we would use it today in humanist organisations, largely gained that meaning in the 19th century. And in the early 20th century, people who wanted to start organisations on the basis of humanist ideas, there was a famous writer in the UK in the mid-20th century called Harold Blackham, who wrote the first Pelican book on humanism. He used it, and we use it today, to describe those ideas and beliefs and values that you might discern across cultures and across time that place the human being rather than any sort of divine principle at the centre of things like the quest for meaning, questions of morality, and the bigger quest of trying to find out what's true or not. So the idea that, you know, man is the measure of all things, to quote a very ancient humanist idea, that, you know, it's through our senses that we understand the universe and we don't need to look to any sort of extra natural or supernatural forces to understand it, that it's through the human community as a whole that we find our morality and our moral values, and that it's through the creation of meaning and the attribution of meaning to experience in the human sense that we find what meaning there is in our lives, divorced from the idea that there might be any ultimate meaning to the universe, which of course humanists, as being atheists or agnostics, don't think. So that's the way that the word is used by us now. Harold Blackham, at the time when he put it into circulation as meaning this, said it wasn't, no one else was really using it at the time, he said, of this word. And I think that was broadly true. I mean, there was some use of it to refer to the historic revival of ancient literature in the Renaissance, but generally it wasn't used that widely. But of course, like all words, it's used still by many different people to mean many different things. But that's what I mean by it. And I suppose in those senses, with that definition, you're right to suggest that a Labour government might be more sympathetic in principle to those ideas than a government of another colour. It's certainly always been the case that the membership of the all-party parliamentary humanist group, which has been going for the last 60 years or so since the 60s, has been largely Labour or Liberal Democrat. There have always been Conservatives in there, but they've been a minority. Why is that? Well, I suppose it's probably because of the non-conformist tendency of the humanist ideas I've described just now, the non-traditional aspects of them, the struggle against outmoded law, and of course, most obvious amongst those sorts of things that a humanist would see, outmoded religion, which doesn't always sit well with a, you know, small c conservative outlook. Progressives are more amenable to those things.
I don't hear much in what you say to disagree with. Particularly, it's always been obvious to me that there have been, in the ancient world, intense debates about morality, about man's place in the universe. Actually, a surprising amount of skepticism in the ancient world about the existence of gods altogether, particularly in Greece. Ideas about the supernatural seem to be immensely flexible, but at the same time, again, especially in Greece, especially in Athens, there were intense and sophisticated debates about the meaning of society, man's place in a moral universe, the nature of morality, and all of these fed into the development of Christian doctrine.
Yeah.
But Theo Hobson, who's a theologian and a Spectator contributor, says that morality as it has evolved in the West bears the very clear stamps of its Christian heritage. So, Theo, I wonder if you could explain where you take issue with Andrew.
Yeah, well, like you, Damien, I agree with a lot of it. And one is, we're, in a way, we're all humanists, aren't we? I mean, I think what's interesting about the word is that it sort of describes our common belief in our culture, which you could say is a form of secular humanism. That's what unites people throughout the Western world, really, because we don't appeal to religion when we have public life. When we do anything in public life, we don't bring God in much. So we are all, it's our common basis, secular humanism. I was thinking about it the other day when watching the news and the newsreader expressing compassion just in their voice and gestures for the suffering of people in Gaza or wherever it was. And I was just thinking, well, that's our creed. We believe all people are important. All human beings are important. We don't question whether you're religious or not. It unites us. It is a public culture, humanism. And the problem with humanism, as Andrew uses it, is that he wants to sort of tighten it up and make a more coherent ideology of it. He doesn't like the vagueness of the humanism that unites us. So he wants to have a more focused identity and say, no, humanism must be this particular belief system. And obviously, it tends to have a oppositional relationship with religion. But I think there's different sorts of humanist. I think a lot of them start off by saying, you can be moral without religion. And no one's going to disagree with that, really, I don't think. But of course, that lapses quite quickly into, you should be moral without religion, which is an interesting distinction. And often the humanist literature and website and so on, they present themselves as all very friendly. We're only saying that you can be totally moral, don't need religion. And then a minute later, they go, religion's the problem. We need to get rid of religion. It's immoral. They imply it's immoral. It's less humane. And obviously, I have a problem with that.
One thing I have a problem with is the way people use the word religion. Religion, as it's understood by Christianity, is, and in the West generally, is a surprisingly modern concept. I mean, I think the word entered the English language probably as late as the 16th century. Before then, there was belief in God and there was faith, but the notion that different people had different religions is something that the West developed itself. And people in the East often have difficulty in accepting the notion that they follow a particular religion rather than a way of life. So, for example, Buddhists are often uncomfortable with being described as belonging to a Buddhist religion. Even some Hindus say, well, you know, many Hindus would say exactly the same thing, but even some Muslims say, well, yes, we accept that Islam is a religion, but it's not quite a religion as you understand it. It's a religion of orthopraxy. It's more cultural than it is theological, even though, of course, it has very firm principles. But nonetheless, they claim there's a sort of Orientalist understanding of religions. And isn't there a danger that this is becoming a little bit of a dialogue of the deaf? That Andrew has one idea of religion and you have another idea of religion.
I don't know about that. Well, I think, of course, religion's complicated, but his view is basically that anything that roughly counts as religion is in the way of true humaneness, true humanism.
Well, that's not my view. You shouldn't say that. I mean, I've never said that, and that's not true. What do I think of religions? Yeah. Well, I think that they're human creations of the human imagination and culture, and they're very different from each other, that they're the way that people have tried to codify their idea of truth, find meaning, embed morality, that they're human creations like any other human creations. And some bits of it are good, some of them are bad. I mean, I don't know, you can say anything about religion generally with a capital R. I mean, I sort of agree what Damien said, that, you know, this is one way of thinking about systems of practice and belief and identity and so on. Other ways are available, perhaps from other parts.
This is disingenuous. When you talk about humanism in detail, you start saying that the true moral force is against religion.
And I never say about.
You associate true morality with
I've just said I
rationality.
Would never. I mean, I've
and
never done
you
that.
Imply that religion is a hindrance to that. Of course, you do. Come on, be honest.
I am being honest. Come on, please, don't be like that.
Well, if I mean, just butt in and ask both of you, what do you understand by religion?
If you wanted me to define it, then I would say what I've said, that I think that. Well, I think there are more than one way of talking about someone as religious. Someone, we might say that someone's religious in the manner of their identity, or that they're religious in the manner of their beliefs, or that they're religious in the manner of their practices, as you've described, for example, lots of different people in different traditions might see themselves as being. Or we could say it's a sort of structure that ties all those things together and is also about culture and cultural identity. All of those things could be religion. Yeah, I think so. And then there's the further metaphorical way in which people might say, you know, well, a 19th century non-believer like George Eliot might talk about her religion being to do good or to love her fellow person or something. So there's clearly also a way in which people use the word more loosely to describe their general attitudes or what is of fundamental importance to them. All of those things people could call by the word religion, obviously. And I would accept all of those as possible.
The reason it's relevant to this discussion, in fact, indispensable, is because over the decades, over a century or two, scholars have had such difficulty defining religion. Because if you define it too narrowly, then you end up excluding, for example, Theravada Buddhism, which doesn't have supernatural beliefs and is atheistic. The Dalai Lama himself has said, my Buddhism is atheistic. Mm. But if you define it too generously, then you end up including football.
Yeah.
Can include Andrew's humanism as a religion too.
Yes, well, you could, but you'd be pushing at the boundaries of the definition.
It would sort of be pointless.
I think it
spiky
is necessary to
that
say
well.
Nobody's ever agreed. Nobody's ever agreed on a definition of religion, which I think is interesting. But the fact that you can't define a word doesn't mean that it's not useful. So let's get that out of the way. I wanted to ask Theo about something he's written, which is that the West is divided in a stagnant standoff between fundamentalist atheism and an equally hardline Christian theism, without accepting that secular values are underpinned by Christianity. Now, I think there are two statements there. I understand that lots of people may be ignorant of the very important role that Christianity has played in molding our notions of morality, in creating many humanitarian institutions and ideas, which is not to say, Andrew, that they're exclusively the product of Christianity. I don't think that for one second. I think they're also rooted in Judaism and also rooted in thinking of the classical world and other religions. But the idea that there's a standoff between fundamentalist atheism and a hardline Christian theism doesn't quite work for me, because I don't meet many fundamentalist atheists in the sense
I don't think there's
I think that the heyday of hardline Christian theism was a very long time ago.
I think the thing I've tried to draw attention to is that humanism, and including the atheist humanism of Dawkins, for example, this tradition comes from a sort of post-Christian culture. And it comes obviously from the rational enlightenment, where people began to believe in rationality as a saving force, not just a neutral thing, but this is the future. This is how human history can be helped. We get rid of the irrational darkness of religion. And this first came from a form of Protestantism, really. That was the big thing that really swept the board, a sort of, it was called deism, which was a sort of rational Protestant mix.
Yeah.
And that was very dominant for about 200 years in the West. And it's from that you get the more scientific emphasis of atheist humanism of someone like Dawkins. And the point is that someone like Dawkins doesn't realize that he comes from this ideology that has Christian roots. So there's a morality there of believing in salvation, believing that we can liberate people. All this energy is not just natural. You don't just naturally think that just if you use your reason. There's a whole tradition behind it of moral purpose and idealism and so on. And, you know, that's very evident in all the sort of Victorian people like Mill and so on. You know, they were semi-Christian, really, even if they rejected religion. And that sort of still lingers in the humanist movement and the atheist movement as well, without them quite understanding where they're coming from.
Couldn't you argue that notions of progress, liberation, moral improvement predate Christianity? First of all, there's a very important role of Judaism, and particularly the apocalyptic ideas of Judaism, and the idea that it's possible to create a new world. And
well, of course, Judaism and Christianity.
It's certainly been argued that the utopias of the secular left and the secular right owe an enormous amount, not just to, you know, Christian ideas about the end of the world, but to Jewish ideas about the end of the world, and then can be traced back to the Great Year and, you know, Greek and Roman ideas of how the world moves, whether in cycles or in, you know, teleologically. So it becomes very difficult to draw lines. But Andrew, we need to talk about humanism and precisely what you mean by humanism.
Sure.
The International Humanist and Ethical Union says humanism is a democratic and ethical life stance which affirms that human beings have the right and responsibility to give meaning and shape to their own lives. Stands for the building of a more humane society through an ethic based on human and other natural values in the spirit of reason and free inquiry through human capabilities. It is not theistic and it doesn't accept supernatural views of reality. If I could just break that down as I see it. I understand the last bit. I get it very clearly. It's not theistic, doesn't accept supernatural views of reality. Fine. And then there's a bit in the middle where it says it stands for the building of a more humane society through an ethic based on human and other natural values in the spirit of reason, which I would say is a bit waffly. What interests me is the beginning. Humanism is a democratic and ethical lifestyle which affirms that human beings have the right and responsibility to give meaning and shape to their own lives. Well, I agree, but isn't that something that human beings naturally do simply by virtue of being human? This is one of the things that Max Weber argued. Yeah. If you want to understand human society, you've got to look at the quest for meaning. He rejected Marx's idea that the development of human society is ultimately determined by people's economic interests, and he thought that the quest for meaning, did he call it Verstehen, I think, was, you know, was the ultimate human impulse. But isn't humanism claiming something that it just exists naturally, which is the search for meaning and will exist in any society, but people may come to what we in the West might regard as very difficult or even sinister solutions to the problem of meaning?
Yeah, I think that it's certainly the case that humanists would agree with the idea that this is to some extent an inevitable part of being human. Is, and what humanists are doing is saying, are sort of naming it, recognizing it, and to some extent elaborating on it with extra value. So yes, I think are normal human beings, as far as we can tell, the sort of creatures that attribute meaning to experience as they move through their lives and seek purpose as one of the ways of making sense of themselves and of their their place in the universe. Yes, I think that's right. And, you know, that's a humanist idea. It's not a unique humanist idea.
Why, it's Theo, like look, saying everyone should breathe, isn't it? It just happens. What's the point of saying it? What do you mean by saying it?
Well, what Damon has just read out is a statement that is from an agreement of various humanist organizations in the Humanist International, which was an attempt to give a cross-cultural common definition of what humanism meant, because obviously humanists from around the world have different antecedent cultures. So humanists who are from Southeast Asian cultures, for example, their humanist values might rest very much on concepts that have come in their cultures from Confucianism. Humanists from India might be reaching back to Lokayata scriptures or Charvaka scriptures, the classical Indian materialists who believed these things in different forms, that morality was natural, that there was no such thing as supernatural sources. Humanists in the West might be thinking more about late 19th century idealism, which I disagree with Theo. I don't think does come mainly from Christianity or from some Enlightenment values or some other pre, post or, you know, Christian values too. And so the document that Damon has just read from was an attempt to give a common voice to those shared values. So that's the reason for stating it.
Okay, so let me ask you, humanists who are not in the humanists from non-Western traditions, yes, would they fight against what we would regard as barbaric and cruel elements of their cultural heritage, such as, you know, arranged marriage and other this is not to deny for a moment that Christianity has its own, you know, aspects of Christianity's heritage are shameful too. But nonetheless, as we speak now, are humanists fighting against abuses of human rights, which are fundamentally rooted in, you know, the ancient practices of non-Western religion?
Yeah, in fact, you find that very commonly as the agenda of humanist organizations. So, for example, you know, humanist organizations in Nigeria will often be campaigning against and exposing, you know, witchcraft allegations and accusations, the abuse of children and of women that goes on and under those accusations. Humanists in India have played a big part in campaigning against caste discrimination and helping to settle people of Dalits and untouchables on their own land. So that is often the case. I mean, one of the things that every humanist is going to sign up to, whatever, as it were, the culture from which they in which they grew up, is the idea that a good basis for having a better morality on a global sense is the concept of universal human rights, which obviously can draw on roots in every culture, although they've been most recently elaborated internationally in a sort of legal way. They have, you know, a foundation in every culture in the world, and that would tend to be the platform which humanists would take action. So yes, that is normally the case. And of course, many humanists will see, as Theo has quite crudely characterized, but nonetheless, I think there's a truth in what he said about humanism, which is that humanists will think that it is possible, not inevitable in a utopian sense, but possible to make progress on the basis of the application of universal human values beyond the culture that you might otherwise feel constrained by. So yeah, I would say that humanists are in the forefront of those sorts of endeavors, alongside people, religious people too, of course, of various kinds.
I do want to ask Theo, what is the distinctively Christian in heritage that you think has helped mold what humanists, you know, refer to as humanism?
Humanists in the West, presumably he means.
Humanists in the West, yes.
Other cultures have some morality like the Golden Rule and so on. But I think that it becomes intensified in Christianity and it gains a radical element that universalism that, as you say, originates perhaps in Judaism, of history is one big story. All humans matter as humans. And there's a whole global narrative, universal narrative of that. And that overcomes tribalism. It overcomes smaller loyalties, smaller ritual traditions and so on. So you have the radicalism of Christianity.
Well, that isn't really the history of Christianity, is it?
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, and there's plenty of universalism in pre-Christian Greek culture. You should read a great book called The Unity of Mankind in Greek Thought if you haven't read it, which goes from Homer up to the Stoics and tells you all about the things that you're often claiming as Christian.
They kept slaves, the ancient Greeks. I'm not impressed.
So did Christians. So did Christians keep slaves.
They did for a bit.
A bit of slavery is okay, is it? There's plenty of anti-slavery intellectual argument that comes in Greece.
Well, they didn't manage to get rid of it. They didn't manage to create a culture that got beyond it. There was a few thinkers.
Well, did Christians, maybe, because it seemed to survive for a very long time, for example, in the transatlantic slave trade, before many centuries. So Christians seemed to be able to keep plenty of slaves too. I think that's a ridiculous thing to say, to imply somehow that because the ancient world...
Christians who got rid of it.
Well, it's Christians who enslaved them as well in the South America.
Well, everyone
America
enslaved
in the
each other.
Well, then what's your point then?
Okay, all right, gentlemen. Listen, let me ask you this. Andrew, why would you have a problem accepting that, notwithstanding the moral compromises and the shameful episodes in the history of Christianity, there is nonetheless in the message of Jesus, which is heavily influenced by Jewish thinking, is interestingly heavily influenced by some of the things that the Pharisees said, but nonetheless, the morality set out by Jesus in one shape or form has helped to mold notions of morality in the West. And at the same time, I don't understand why Theo has a problem with acknowledging the gigantic stature of many of the philosophical arguments put forward by the ancients, particularly given the anxiety of the medieval Christian church to reclaim or to reinterpret, reintroduce into Western society the thinking of Plato and Aristotle, for example.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, to answer the bit that's addressed to me, I don't have a problem with that at all. I mean, it's plain that the morality as well, the different moralities and the different interpretation of the moralities as expressed in the Bible have had a huge significance, especially on Western, but then as Western culture has gone global on the world, on the moral center of the world. But, you know, I would also say, as you've said, there are pre-Christian influences, whether Greek, Roman, Indian or Chinese. There are non-Christian influences, certainly in the West, especially the Western encounter with Buddhism and Confucianism and the opening up of the East, which had an enormous, profound effect on the Western mind, and that they supplement and add to the Christian heritage that we've got. But that's, you know, no, only a fool is going to try and say there's a hard stop in the history of ideas, because ideas just influence each other all the time. And just as humanistic ideas influence Christianity and Christian ideas will have influenced modern humanists, this is ongoing all the time.
Now I want to ask you about a specific problem that humanism, the one that you represent, has in the West, in this country particularly, which is it is identified with a particular set of people and a particular set of beliefs. If you look at the people who are prominent humanists, I mean, I always used to associate humanism with the, I think, rather comic figure of Polly Toynbee, because she was, whether she was president of the British Humanist Association. And when I was young, there was a split between the British Secular Society and the humanists, who didn't like each other at all. And isn't there something slightly sectarian about humanism? I look at all these, you know, agreed statements and disagreements between different humanist groups. And on the whole, I'm perfectly prepared to accept that people are no longer religious, because all the statistics point to it. The growth of the nuns, people who don't hold any particular religious belief, is a desperate, fundamental threat to the survival of Christianity as a force in Western civilization. But nonetheless, very few people, in my experience, identify themselves predominantly as humanists. And I haven't seen any statistics showing that a substantial portion of the population are self-described humanists.
Yeah, it's not as common as an identity as it is as beliefs, I agree. I mean, YouGov and Ipsos Mori say, when they ask the question, that about the same number of people self-identifying humanist in their surveys as Muslims, so somewhere between 5% and 7%. But then if you look at something like the vehicles through which people express their values, like humanist weddings, for example, or humanist funerals. I mean, humanist weddings are now the biggest type of legal marriage in Scotland, where they're legally recognised. You know, they're bigger than all the religious types of marriage almost put together. And so there are, when people reach for an institution or a vehicle or a practice that will express their values, I think they are increasingly reaching for the services that are provided by humanist organisations in various ways. And I think that the beliefs and values that are captured by, for me, the word humanism, although they're not as completely universally shared as Theo implied earlier, are quite widely shared.
Can I ask something about the humanist
wedding? Okay, Theo, over to you.
What's the difference between a humanist wedding and just a secular wedding?
So the difference primarily is, so if you're going to have a civil wedding or a secular wedding, let's say with a state registrar, a couple's going to go along and there'll be some sort of pre-approved script. You'll be married by a state employee who you don't know anything about their values. You don't know them. It might be in a particular place that's approved, or in a register office where you can have a statutory wedding. A humanist marriage is conducted by a humanist celebrant who is obviously guaranteed to share the beliefs and values of the couple. They work together to plan the sort of ceremony that they want that reflects their beliefs and values. They hold it in a place that's a particular significant to them. And it is completely, not just primarily, but completely about their relationship, their life together, their beliefs and their values, to give the meaning that they...
Isn't that religious in the sense that Durkheim would have recognized it as religious?
You could call it religious. Yeah, there's a debate in sociology about whether or not any sort of human practice and ritual is...
A secular wedding, just as the registry office, is somehow inhumane?
I didn't say anything negative about that sort of wedding. I said that a humanist wedding would be one unlike a civil wedding, where people work, a couple work with a celebrant, discuss them the meaning that the event had for them, the significance of their life together, their beliefs and their values, and then wove those into a ceremony in a way that would give the event the significance that they wanted to give it. And they would have the confidence in that process, as they would in the ceremony itself, that the celebrant shared those views.
People would do in a secular way on their own.
Luck to them then, Theo. I'm just describing what a humanist wedding is because I've been asked.
Because it has a label of humanist, sort of approved by you, it's suddenly more humane.
No, I didn't say it was more humane. I don't know why you keep saying that I'm saying it's more humane.
They're both secular things in our secular humanist culture.
I've described the differences between the two. If you don't understand it, I can't help you. But plainly, people choose one over the other on a daily basis. Some people choose to have a secular registrar. Some people in countries like Scotland, where humanist weddings are an option, and they're different in the ways that I've described from civic registrars, choose to have those ceremonies. Well, good luck to both of them, as far as I'm concerned.
Can I just leave you with this little reminiscence? It was about 20-odd years ago. And because I was doing research at the, I was doing research at the LSE at the time. And I was invited to talk to the National Secular Society, which at the time didn't get on with the humanists.
Oh, we're very good friends now.
A doubtable lady called Barbara Smoker, who was the most hardline atheist you'd ever meet, though her brother was a Catholic priest. And we met on a Sunday morning in Conway Hall. And we were sitting at a table and it began with the ringing of a little bell and I just couldn't keep a straight face. I said, this is just like going to church. And there were all these, they didn't appreciate that at all. They were particularly when I called Barbara Smoker the Pope of British secularism. But Andrew and Theo, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you.